Let's see. Well, we will start with the
2019 budget overview
and with awareness. Murray is here.
I want to approve the meeting minutes.
And we'll start with the minutes.
I'll make a motion to approve the minutes of September 5th, 2018.
I'll second.
Okay. All right, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Okay. So we will get started. Welcome.
Thank you. Well, I sent ahead, Nettie assured me everybody got the description of what we do, so I thought if you have questions for me, I'll be happy to answer them, since I was here last year and we have the same format.
I just wondered if you have a relationship already with the new restorative justice program, or would it be anticipated that you would?
Interestingly enough, I received the information about that 4 business days before the deadline from the Westchester County Mid-Hudson Regional Task Force, so I wasn't aware, and I didn't have time to get a proposal together.
And about how many people do you serve?
We have a rotating kind of eight-week program, yeah, and we have we're in the New Paltz High School, we're in a church in New Paltz, and we are in the Ellenville High School, and then we're getting in a church there as well. So we'll be, I would say, contacts, because we went into Ellenville last year, and we had kids from New Paltz go and peer train about 40 of their kids, and then with the other kids that, you know, would come in and use the program, it's probably up to, I would say, like 600 contacts a year at least.
Mm-hmm. Now, this was originally in the budget, right? I thought that was my understanding, and then it, for some reason, it came out of the budget, or I don't know what.
Yeah, I think it was two years ago, it was in for $20,000.
Mm-hmm.
And then they ended up at the end telling me that I was getting 10. And then I believe last year it was in for 10.
Okay. Now, was this originally included in the budget this year and then it was taken out of the budget, or was it?
On my end, I don't really know.
Okay.
Ken's in.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe that's a question for Ken.
I might have to look at it. I know that there were several contracts we wanted to have a procurement conversation about.
Okay.
So some of the contracts removed the contingency. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure if this is one or not, but.
Okay.
Yeah, Amber said that the there's funding and contingency, so that
right.
you need a sponsor, a legislative sponsor, to take it out of contingency and bring it to Ways and Means.
Gotcha. So you're going to speak with the Ways and Means then as well when they have the budget?
Nettie told me they'd be contacting you, but I haven't heard anything
okay.
yet.
Okay. All right. Yeah. The process just started. So.
Okay. Okay.
Is there anything else? Any other questions? No? Okay. That was easy.
All
right.
Thank you.
All right.
Thanks for coming.
Thank you. Have a great night.
You too.
Okay. Great. I just suggested you have both commissioners here. Commissioner Iaposi has probably 30 contracts on the agenda as well, too.
Right.
The bulk of these things are in implement programming for 2019, so maybe.
Sure.
You want to combine that somehow, or you know, figure how to for revenue or whatever.
I have about 5 hours of remarks.
Oh yeah. Okay. Jeez. You should have started before we got here.
I think Dr. Smith has one resolution on the agenda, and the rest are
okay.
Commissioner Hoses.
We should move one up to enable you to.
We'll go on.
Sorry,
we'll
spend less time.
Okay.
29 resolutions would be easier.
Which one is it?
Well, being that Dr. Smith only has one, so maybe we can get started with that, and then.
But she has a 4-hour presentation too.
All righty.
Condensed 15 minutes.
Yeah.
Okay,
Mary. Right. Let's see, where should we start?
Oh, there might be two. I know there was one with the college, right?
There are like four or something. The last four of the college.
That's right. Health research and consultation. There's two. Dr. Smith has two on those.
Okay. Let me get set up here.
So you didn't miss anything other than this and Marie Schultes. Yeah, didn't really have much to say other than it's the same as last year.
Okay. All right. Which do you know the two resolutions? Spare us some.
Dr. Smith has two. She has
24 and 25.
Okay.
Okay, so that's 443.
447. Can I have my phone? It's on my phone. This isn't for some reason.
And also 26 relates to the Department of Mental Health.
443 and 27.
All right, I'm almost there.
These are all leases that are on the agenda.
Even though it says public works.
Okay. Right, okie dokie.
The providers of mental health services.
So what was the number? 443?
Say the numbers again, please, Ken.
So Dr. Smith has 24, 25, 26, 27.
443 is. Okay. All right. I got it now.
What's the last? Six of them on the agenda.
Okay.
All
right. So we'll start with the top then. All righty. We will go with resolution. 407 then?
Yep.
All right, this is approving the execution contract in excess of $50,000 with the family of Woodstock. This is for the Washburn House Domestic Violence Shelter.
I'll move it. Second.
All right, it's state federal, right? There's no county dollars on this one. Move for discussion?
Yes, I did.
Okay. Any discussion? Mm-hmm. Nothing?
I think they're amazing. Wonderful. I met somebody who actually went through the program, and she's a successful, advocate now herself, so.
Yeah. Okay. Well, hearing that, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Carried. We will move to 408. This is approving the execution of a contract next to $50,000 with Berkshire Farm Center and Service for, this is non-secure detention services.
I'll move it.
All right. Second?
Second.
Discussion?
Looks like another
program. I don't know if I know this program or not. So this is in lieu of the, detention for youth, DFY?
And non-secure, what exactly is non-secure, the language on that?
When placement is directed, it's not related to having to be in a secure facility.
Mm-hmm.
We arrange for that with Berkshire, and usually it's congregate care. And it's for kids that are demonstrating behaviors or circumstances where we need to have them in a congregate care facility, but placement is non-secure. It's not usually related to a JD or a TENS.
Okay, thank you.
Anything else?
These are not to exceed contracts. I don't believe we had any utilization of this contract in the current fiscal year so far.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Carrie.
Kathy's going to abstain on all of the gateway.
Okay. Resolution 409, approving the execution of a contract amendment in excess of $50,000 with Gateway Community Industries. And this is to exercise the first of two options to exceed the term of the agreement for 1 year. This is with this is for the Job Shop program.
I'll move it.
Discussion.
I'd like to recuse myself on this on the basis my sister receives services from Gateway.
Okay. So it'll be a number of them then, right? All Gateway
I
related?
I think it's just two.
Okay. Okay. Gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Right. Resolution 410, approving the execution of a contract in excess of $50,000. With Family of Woodstock. And
I'll move it.
I'll second.
Any discussion?
I love these guys.
Hearing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Very carried. All right, this is Resolution 411. It's approving the execution of a contract in excess of $50,000 with the Family of Woodstock. This is for the family house shelter for youth. Move for discussion.
I'll move it.
Second.
Second. Any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Carried. All right. Resolution 412. This is approving the execution of a contract in excess of $50,000. With Gateway Community Industries, and this is for the food stamp employment and training program. Move it.
I'll move it.
Second.
Second.
This, yeah.
I will recuse.
Okay. This great program. Yeah, this has come through us a number of times, and just almost like the re-education to help people just kind of. Learn their way back, you know, society as they wean from
proper nutrition from
services. I think even shopping and stuff. I think is included. Just kind of shows them the helps them, learn a better way in order to do it. So, another good program. Any other discussion? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Carried. All right. This is. Resolution 413, approving the execution of a contract in excess of $50,000 with YWCA, and this is for the Families Now program.
I will move it happily.
Okay, second. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
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 Okay. Let's see. What is this? 414? 414? Yeah, approving the execution of a contract amendment causing the aggregate amount to be in excess of $50,000 with the James McGinnis and Associates to extend the term of agreement for support and maintenance of the preschool program software.
100%
county? Yeah, this 100% county, 27, a little over 27,000, 27.5. Move for discussion.
Yeah, I'll move it. I do have a question once it's seconded.
Second.
Second.
So what does this software do?
It tracks and does all the billing and claiming as it relates to children with developmental disabilities between the ages of 3 and 5 that we provide service for. It's a highly customized package. This firm is based in Schenectady.
Yeah.
And probably 50 of the 57 counties use this particular software package. It's highly customized for this particular use.
And in New York State?
Yeah. Preeminent provider.
Yeah. Yeah. They're the go-to provider. Again, I can't think of another package that's available to do this particular service. It's pretty much, again, I think it started about 20 years ago when the program was first born, and they developed this package and all the counties invested in it, and we've had it for many, many, many years.
Good.
This is for kids in the Head Start program and no. Sophie Finn and no?
That we provide services to children with developmental disabilities. We do two programs, early intervention program, which is children first, to 3 years of age, and then children 3 to 5, we also were responsible for their services. And then once they start school, mm-hmm. they transfer over to the state education department.
Okay.
And their services are provided through the district.
Will that change when the 4-year-olds become part of the school district?
No, because this is children with special needs versus regular ed students.
Other questions, discussion? No? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay,
let's see. Yeah, 415. This is approving the execution of the contract Nexus $50,000 with Northeastern HVAC for the removal of existing rooftop HVAC units. This is located at, obviously, Social Service on Development Court, right? Let's see. And provided this includes the installation of new units. Move for discussion.
I'll move it.
Second.
Questions?
It seems like they've been fighting with this roof for years. Is it just the structure itself, or?
No, I think this focuses on providing maintenance for the HVAC units that are located on the roof. Mm-hmm. I mean, structurally, my understanding is that the building's perfectly sound.
Okay.
They have upgraded some of the units on a rotating basis.
Mm-hmm.
So, given the nature of the layout there, I know that those units cover a lot of square footage.
Mm-hmm.
We've had some episodes where we've had to set up fans and mm-hmm. do some things when the units have not been functioning properly, but considering the number of staff we have there, I think they've been very responsive and they work in conjunction with buildings and grounds to make sure that they're maintained properly. And we have had a couple replaced. They do bring in cranes and it's quite a production when that
they're
happens.
Energy efficient.
And they're energy efficient, that's good.
Man is on that.
How long ago were they replaced? I'm sure it predates your time here, so.
No, within the past couple of years, they upgraded a couple of
upgraded?
It's okay. many units on that large structure.
Okay. Yep, gotcha.
Around like the maintenance cycle.
Sure.
Of course, everything on the family court side has all just been replaced as part of that project as well, too. So this is that ongoing upgrading.
Sure. Okay. Anything else? Mm-mm. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay, what are we at? 416. It's approving execution of a contract amendment in excess to $50,000 with Liberty Resources to extend the term of agreement for trauma specialist and care manager.
Move it.
Second.
Any discussion?
And this is for crime, not crime victims, and this is for.
Justice.
This is part of Coordinated Children's Services, the MSD, Multi Systemic Therapy Unit.
Okay.
So it's for trauma specialist case manager. And the caseload primarily consists of children who arrive at receiving services to keep them intact with their families. And Liberty Resources has been an excellent provider with regard to the staff and personnel that they have provided. And they're on location with us and receive referrals from Coordinated Children's Services.
So it's not court mandated, but do they offer education? So it's similar to parent training, or
The trauma specialist case managers basically provide treatment to the children. And there will be involvement with other family members. So education can be a component. It depends on what type of treatment programming is arrived at.
Okay.
Thank you.
Anything else? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. 417. It's approving the execution of contract amendment in excess of $50,000 with Liberty Resources to extend the term of agreement with Multi Systemic Therapy Unit.
I'll move it.
Mm-hmm. Second.
Discussion. What is that exactly? I tried to look that up. The Multi Systemic Therapy Unit.
Yeah, Multisystemic therapy would involve cases that originate either as PIMS or JVs, and when it's arrived at that probation or treatment without having to have placement, that's how the multisystemic therapy model works. They're not put into congregate care facilities, so they're working with multiple systems. Usually it's going to involve the school system, probation department, and Liberty Resources.
Mm-hmm. Makes sense.
Yeah, well, Craig, one of the investments we make in preventative services in the county is to make sure we're trying to divert at-risk children from out-of-home placement, right? Very expensive placement versus making strides with them, keeping them intact with their family. This is an evidence-based model, very unique to Ulster County. In fact, this work that happens at Coordinating Children's Services really informs a lot of the work we're building into our new restorative justice model. Really, Ulster County has been on the cutting edge of these services for a long time. We pride ourselves in having almost a 95% rate of keeping kids in their home and not in out-of-home placement.
So, yeah.
In fact,
so important.
I know that some of the commissioner's staff were up in Albany at a meeting with the court system with some of the people from the county attorney's office, and they're just blown away with what we're able to accomplish at Coordinated Children's Services. And again, I'm not aware of another county that's in the same league as what we're able to accomplish here. And we're going to build on this on the restorative justice side with the 16 and 17 adults over the next couple of years. We're excited about it.
One of the collateral benefits, obviously, is by not having to arrive at placing in congregate care. Clearly, there's a savings, but keeping the families intact. And we have statistics that we track each year. So we did have a 90% plus success rate in 2017 with over 64 cases where the children remained in school and they avoided placement. So that's a really enormous success.
Right.
But it's intensive work, you know, with the kids and with their families, and a lot of that is done at our offices and in the community. So it's a really unique program, and we are really fortunate. And I think that we'll see that translated into success with this 16 and 17 year olds that will be providing services.
So this whole block of programs that you're looking at here make up the core of Coordinated Children's Services, which is the unit at the Department of Social Services.
But at some point, it may also tie in with restorative justice, too.
Right, so yes, and some of these children can be referred to some of the aspects of the restorative justice program, but the core of that work will be focused on the kids that are just slightly older, 16 and 17 year olds, that are justice involved. I mean, our goal here, quite frankly, is the earlier you work with these kids and you divert them away from the system, the more success you're going to have. Again, and the proof is in the pudding. I mean, this is something that we've had a lot of success at. When I joined the county 8 years ago and I first looked at our program, I was blown away. And every time I look at it, the investment, we can document with great certainty that the investment that we make up front saves us millions of dollars in the long run. Working with these children.
And the raise the age children and restorative justice children that we identified through referrals or cases that are brought, the significant criteria that we'll use to evaluate whether referrals to MST are appropriate will be if they're at risk of placement. Not all cases that come through restorative justice or raise the age will necessarily have a landscape that suggests there's a risk of placement, but that's a criteria that we've always arrived at. And so the data that we track in order to avoid having to go to placement and congregate care is really one of the most important variables in connection with these services.
And I would imagine it could even be tied in with the health department as well, in case there's any mental health issues or potential drug use. If these are at-risk kids, it's all
DSS. Interestingly, I mean, there's always these misconceptions about our mental health system here in Ulster County.
Right.
And years ago, when we transitioned away from direct care or direct providership at the Department of Mental Health, most people don't realize that the very, very intense kids, we actually transferred the license from the Department of Mental Health to the Department of Social Services. We have the only licensed Article 31 mental health clinic at a Department of Social Services in the state. So when people say, you know, somehow we have diminished our services, it's just not true. The most intensive children will be transferred and they're not overseen to our Coordinated Children's Services, which is a licensed mental health.
That's interesting. That's good.
Yeah.
You said it's the only one in the state?
I mean, I could see
it.
I'm not aware of any other. And that's part of our Coordinated Children's.
I know what I had to go through with through OMA to get it approved.
It was novel to them.
You want to do what?
But you know what? You watch 5 years from today,
there'll
be a lot more of them.
Just hearing the nature of the services that are needed or that are likely to come, or possible to come into play, makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, especially the programs that keep kids at home, as long as the structure is positive. I even see that with our elderly trying to avoid nursing homes. You know, the quality of life is just so much better. And in an atmosphere where you have, you know, family and things are a little bit more normal and routine, more so than they would be in some sort of institution.
And also to highlight that having that mental health clinic reside at the Department of Social Services versus the Department of Mental Health has tremendous fiscal benefits for the taxpayers of Ulster County as well, too. So not only is it good programming, good services, but it also is better for the taxpayer.
Right. Okay. Anything else? All in favor?
Aye.
All right, 418. So approving the execution of a contract amendment in excess of $50,000 with Liberty Resources to extend the term of an agreement for intensive family specialist.
I'll move it.
Second.
Any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. All right, 419. Approving the execution of a contract amendment causing the aggregate amendment amount to exceed $50,000 with Berkshire Farm Center and Service for Youth to extend the term of the agreement for crisis respite services.
I'll move for discussion.
A second.
Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Resolution 420, approving the execution of a contract in excess of $50,000 for Berkshire Farm and Services for Youth for the Functional Family Therapy Program.
I'll move it.
Second.
Second.
Discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Resolution 421, approving the execution of a
contract. 420?
Oh, did I skip
that? Was 420.
That was 420.
That was
420?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You good? Okay. Approving the execution of a contract in excess of $50,000 with the West Publishing Corporation for Clear online investigated software. Clear, obviously, that's an acronym. Mm-hmm. I would think so. Anybody
can see through it.
But just could be a name.
Really? I don't know.
Because they're checking to see if the record is clear on the people.
It's an investigative tool, is my understanding.
Right. But CLEAR is just CLEAR and it's not an acronym? I thought it was in all caps, so I wasn't sure. Yeah, all right. Kyle, we get the gist, though. Yeah. It's good enough. Okay.
So what do they
investigate? I think we've never had to use the tool.
Right. Well, that's good. Yeah. Did we move it?
Really?
No, I'll move it for you.
Second?
Huh? So what are they investigating there? You know, income verifications or previous?
Generally, if you'd like to be able to find address information to serve subpoenas, to locate non-respondent parents or non-custodial parents who need to be noticed about court proceedings. And I think it is. I think it's something locator enforcement.
Okay. I figure as much. Yeah.
I'll follow up with you on it.
No, that's fine. Don't bother. We're good. We're good.
I think it's comprehensive locator.
Are you going to be able to sleep tonight if you don't know?
Yeah, no, I hate acronyms. Oh, my God. Nightmare. Yeah. I've never heard more acronyms before being involved in government in my life.
The Sheriff's Department and also probation.
Usually it's too cold.
Yeah.
All right. Anything else? All in favor?
Aye.
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 Okay.
420.
Approving the execution of a contract amendment in excess of $50,000 with BMC Group to extend the term of an agreement for preschool transportation services. Mm. Move for discussion.
I'll move it.
Second.
Discussion? Questions? Well, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay, 423. Approving the execution of a contract in excess of $50,000 with the family of Woodstock for the Title 20, right? XX? Yeah, 20 domestic violence assistance.
Right.
I'll move it.
Second.
Okay. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
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 Okay, 424. Is approving the execution of a contract next to $50,000 with the family of Woodstock for the independent living program.
I'll move it.
Second.
Discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All right. 425. Approving the execution of a contract next to $50,000 with family services. This is for family education services. Mm-hmm. Move it.
I'll move it.
Second.
Discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
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 We are at, what, 426?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Resolution 426, approving the execution of a contract in excess of $50,000 with the Youth Advocate Program, and this is for youth advocacy services.
Move it.
Second.
Second.
Discussion? Hearing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. All right. 427. This is approving the execution of a contract amendment in excess of $50,000, Berkshire Farm Center and Services for Youth to extend an agreement for life skills case aids.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'll move it.
I'll second.
Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
All right. Resolution 428, approving the execution of a contract in excess of $50,000, family Woodstock. This is for daycare registration and inspection.
I move it.
It's 100% state, which we like.
Second.
Second. Any second. Discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All right. Resolution 429, approving the execution of a contract in excess of $50,000 with the family of Woodstock. This is for homeless shelters.
I move it.
Did you see the dollar amount? I'll second.
Any discussion?
Where in the budget? This is phenomenal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
1.65.
I'm trying to figure out how to phrase the question because this would come out of which one of your budget lines, so I can look at it later.
It's reimbursed through the TANF program or safety net. Depending on the eligibility of the client.
Okay, but only 51% of it.
No, that's the county sheriff's 51% of the total.
49 counties.
Oh, is it 49?
I think. I can't.
Is it 49?
Yeah, 49 counties.
Yeah, 49
counties. 51 federal. That's close.
51 federal, yeah, close.
That just seems phenomenal. I mean, I know they have many shelters out there, but this is just for Darmstadt and family. It's not the teen shelter. It's not Washburn House.
It's
not
a shelter for single adults.
Mm-hmm.
And the family inn is across the street, and that's for families.
And this doesn't cover, and then that's totally separate from the hotels that get paid to put people up. Okay. I'd like to look at that budget line more.
It's not a separate line. It's paid through the main programs.
Through TANF.
To reimburse the rate. So, like, for example, yeah, it's whatever the rate is per night, per client.
Mm-hmm.
You know. It's less expensive than a hotel room, and it provides additional support services.
Right. But I mean, what's done to get them into permanent housing? Because this just seems just for something temporary. Even if you're looking for a job, if you're going to put down that you're a Darmstadt shelter, I mean, it doesn't really make you marketable.
This is emergency housing.
$7 million.
Transitional.
Each of these individuals will present with their own unique circumstances. Mm-hmm. Some may be dealing with substance abuse in daycare rehab. be searching for employment, have employment disabilities. They may be receiving employment programs through Gateway that we have.
Mm-hmm.
So they're in compliance with the criteria to continue to be eligible
for the public
assistance that they're receiving.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that we're always going to be working on is transition to permanent housing.
Mm-hmm.
Permanent housing inventory is challenging to find, particularly with some of the income that individuals will arrive at once they are employed or while they continue to be on benefits. And that's one of the variables that are part of that equation. As far as the family and the children, that's temporary assistance for needy families, and that's 100%. So, and we're also working closely with those families to try to find, you know, them permanent housing,
more permanent.
You know, based on where there might be employment and where the children are going to school.
Now, what is the housing locally? Is it just a challenge that you said to find something affordable, but it's
really
throughout the county?
Challenging.
And then the
low-income housing
and transportation.
The reaction to those from a lot of the communities.
So most local communities reject the idea of building low-income housing in their areas. You can see where, just here in the city of Kingston, with some of the projects that are on the drawing board, has huge opposition. But it's important, it's needed. We also struggle with a lot of people that would normally rent to someone on an affordable basis. They're now using things like short-term rentals and making more money by keeping it as a pseudo hotel room.
Competition.
You know, the competition is really, so it's a challenge. I think we have more people in emergency housing today than we've had in any time in the last several years.
Mm.
It's a tough situation, but it's one where we work hard. We can be really proud of the work that families are doing here. I know that it's part of a statewide effort led by Governor Cuomo, the Office of Children and Families, the Office of Temporary Disability Assistance, and the state controller. They audited every similar homeless shelter in the state two years ago, and we scored high in both shelters with no major deficiencies cited.
Mm-hmm.
And again, it's a lot to be proud of. It's hard work. And,
I mean, again, family is amazing,
but
it's just, I'm kind of taken aback that there's, you know, that much being spent just to temporarily house people.
That's a fraction of what we spend globally.
The funding that the county executive got, $2 million, $4 million to end poverty, is any of that going into, you know, future designs or planning?
There's a lot of partnerships that are going to be involved. I know here in Kingston, I know they're working with their land bank, and they've gotten a substantial grant to convert all the properties they had off that were in foreclosure. They purchased them all. They're going to be converting those to affordable housing.
Okay.
It's a challenge. Look at the pushback on some of the projects advanced by REPCO, just in Kingston alone. I know over the years, several legislators complained about the need for affordable housing, and I'm the first one to tell you, come forward, we'll find you the federal money and a developer. Mm-hmm. But again, when you go back and talk to your town supervisor, the enthusiasm wanes.
Mm-hmm.
And I know legislators that have reached out in the past, I find money, I find a developer, they talk to the town supervisor, and I never hear from them again. Mm-hmm. So,
and it is a really serious set of circumstances right now. The challenges around getting communities and municipalities to be receptive to these proposals, and a good NIMBY, not in my backyard, and the resistance that we've seen locally, and the resistance locally has even been around senior housing. So,
right.
I mean, the pushback is not just, you know, for families, senior housing for people on fixed incomes that need a safe place to live. It is incredibly challenging, and we're uniquely fortunate in Ulster County to have a provider that we have a DV shelter. We have two shelters, Family Inn and Darmstadt, mm-hmm. for adults and families, and we have Family House for runaway and homeless youth. Now, many other communities around us do not have any shelter system whatsoever, so that they're struggling even more mightily by trying to place those homeless individuals and families in hotel settings without any services whatsoever. So we're really, really fortunate that we have the shelter structure that we do.
Yeah, I want to give Commissioner Iacocci, this whole team, a lot of credit. I mean, it's very, very challenging to address someone in crisis. We have a absolute legal mandate to provide housing to eligible people that present for emergency housing, and they go out of their way. I mean, you should see them over there at 4:45 on a Friday, when all the problems seem to show up, and they get it done time and time and time again. And it's very difficult and stressful, and again, we have a lot of great partners, but it all goes back to the core team at the Partners and Services. They work very hard, and they produce an awful lot, and make sure that people in this community are provided for when there's no other options for them. So it's tough.
Good. Thank you. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All right. Let's see. We're at 4.43. Mm-hmm. Approving the execution of a contract in excess of $50,000 with Health Research Incorporated for the Emergency Preparedness Program.
Mm-hmm. Move that. Do you have a second for the commissioner? Or do you
Oh, sure. Is there any questions?
We were trying to figure out what it stood for.
What's that?
What was the what were the initials on there?
Huh? Oh, one clear.
Okay.
But anything specifically?
Appreciate.
Thanks,
Michael.
Thank you all.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Have a good evening.
All right, you
too. Good night, everybody. Good night, Rob.
I know that Dr. Smith has a bunch of resolutions, and I know part of the topic tonight was to talk about the budget. Mm-hmm. And I know she was prepared to talk a little bit tonight about the medical examiner's office. Mm-hmm. And there was a lot of misinformation flying around, and people talking about it. So, since we're in the context of the budget, would you be open to a 10-minute discussion about that office? She has a small presentation for you if you're interested.
Yeah, that's right. How many resolutions do we have?
Five or six.
Four, five, six.
Five or six. Yeah, 10 minutes, you said? Yeah, 10 minutes.
Yeah, you can do the resolutions first and then that?
We'll finish them up.
Four of these six are just lease extensions.
Right.
For providers.
Yeah, no, yeah.
Are they all the same providers?
Family with stock.
So we can't
block them together.
Yeah, so these are leases for we partner with two not-for-profits to provide mental health clinic services. Mm-hmm. One of them is Astor Children and Families. They operate out of the Golden Hill office and all out of the Trudy Farber office in Ellenville. Mm-hmm. And then Family Services is the parent company for our adult clinic provider. And they rent space from us at Golden Hill and also at Trudy Farber. So these are just extensions of their leases.
I don't think it has to be the same provider to block them together, as long as they're on. The same service. Yeah.
So we've been
and like Ken said, these are just, they've been in Trudy Resnick down in Ellenville for years now, so, and they're all good contracts, and I think, we get it.
I think Golden Ground negotiated a slight increase in the rate.
Right, it's like $11 per square foot, something like that. But utilities, taxes, everything are included. So, yeah, but
so this would
yeah,
be 4:53 through 4:56. Yeah. All's in that
case. 4:43.
I'll make a motion to block those.
Second.
Discussion on the block. None. All right. Motion.
Well, we got to vote.
We got to vote on the block.
Yep.
On the block.
Okay. Yeah. All right. So discussion.
Aye.
Vote on the block. Okay. All right. And then.
I make a motion to accept to approve the block.
Second.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
So then we have to go back and pick up 4:43.
Yep. 4:43. Yep. This was already. Wait, was this moved? I don't know if it was. Let's do it again. We moved it in second. 4:43.
We called it, but I don't know.
Yeah, that's emergency preparedness.
I'll move it.
Yeah, move it. Okay.
Yeah.
Second.
All right. Questions? Discussion.
So this is for the emotional impacts of an emergency.
It could be part of that, but it really is how the community responds to an outbreak. For instance, if we had a disaster of either environmental disaster or chemical disaster or what have you, we actually, as part of that, We convene what we call like point of dispensing exercises, you know, if we had an anthrax scare and all of that business.
Mm-hmm.
So the team basically does monthly meetings with various community stakeholders. We run the what's called the point of dispensing pods. We do educational outreach, all by way of preparing the community for some sort of a disastrous event. And it does come basically from the feds, ultimately. Steve Peterson is involved in a lot of this activity with us, the 911 Center, and
Greg from Ulster Community Action. Is that the same one?
Who?
Greg from Ulster County Community Action?
No.
That's a different one.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's different.
Okay, I can't. Boy.
No, this is well different.
Keep up with them all.
This is well different from the one that was coming out of state, right? With was it Sergeant White? And you partnered with Department of Homeland Security.
Yeah, so this
right.
is different.
Homeland
this is
Security.
Where we would actually dispense mass amounts of drugs.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
You know, mm-hmm. And I know I volunteered as a. So
we were
going to the drugs one time. So it's
like, gotcha. Do you do periodic, you know,
pod drills?
Yeah.
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 Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's one of the mandates, the deliverable for the
grant.
It's quite
the
grant.
A revenue.
I bet.
No.
Yes.
So there's deliverables.
Right.
What's it like duck and cover back in the...
No, yeah. No more bother than that.
It's like, you know, 300 people show up to get a mass dispensing of drugs.
And then
right.
they test us on how many people we can conceivably pass through the system in a
mm-hmm.
given amount of time. And also, you know, the whole business of us having access to the depositories of these drugs that the federal government
mm-hmm.
keeps in various places and how we would access that and
mm-hmm.
all of that kind of...
Gotcha.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
Thank you.
Good. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Okay. I think we have one more.
One more.
Resolution 447 is authorizing the chairman of the legislature to execute an intermunicipal agreement with SUNY Cortland for a field work assignment.
I'll move it.
Second. Questions? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Right now, 43. Authorizing chairman of the legislature to execute a lease agreement. Oh, wait. No,
we
already did this. Okay. Yeah, very good.
Down.
All right. We are completed here. And then.
Do you want to hear about the medical examiner's office?
Absolutely.
Yes.
And, then
yeah.
and I would like to take, after that, just 2 minutes to talk about a large contract that's coming next month. I want to give you a heads up and talk about the parameters of that. Something that we. It's important to get done, and I want to understand what the committee would want as far as information from us for that.
Sure.
Next month,
okay.
I just prepared a handout for you, too. That
thank you.
Just pass it. You're welcome.
Sure. Nice. Thank you. And I have to give you part of the commission.
Cool. There we go.
I think after all of the attention that was given to the medical examiner division, you know, when I was talking with Ken about preparing something, just by way of clarification as to really what it is that we have within our auspices, and this was done by way of a PowerPoint, so there's some background information in this, but, you know, I just basically wanted to go through the differences between, like, a coroner and a medical examiner, for instance, and all through the United States, there are various combinations or iterations of that kind of system. Not everyone has a medical examiner. Not everyone has a coroner system. When you look back in terms of our history in Ulster County, on page 3 here, prior to 1979, Ulster County was a coroner system. And a coroner is essentially not a physician, someone who runs for the position, so it's an elected position, and very often funeral directors are the folks who run for those positions. Back in 79, and I included some, back in the 60s actually, I included some clippings of paperwork that, or of the newspaper articles that were being run at those during that time. And one of the issues that came up was conflict of interest, that the funeral directors who ran for the coroner, you know, would basically take in a case because they the concern was, or the allegation was, that they would profit from taking in that case as a medical examiner by doing the funeral and all of the other, the burial and what have you. So the county, at that time, actually post 1979, decided to forego the coroner system because of the conflict of interest issues and adopt a medical examiner issue. A medical examiner has to be a physician. If you have a coroner system, you would need what's called the physician to the coroner. So you'd need a physician anyway if you had a coroner system. But the medical examiner system, and in 1979, we had our first medical examiner. He was Dr. McNamara. Actually, this plaque, the photograph of the plaque, is what's currently in the morgue over at Health Alliance Hospital at the present time, honoring Dr. McNamara. The New York State County law, it's not a health law, it's a county law, Article 17A basically requires counties to do the work of dealing with unattended deaths. And they would be defined as homicides, suicides, an unintended death that was not an expected death, traumatic deaths due to MVAs, motor vehicle accidents, and what have you. So it's a requirement that the county provide the service. And as I said, the medical examiner needs to be a physician. And what I did was I did an excerpt of the county law that pertains to that as the obligation of the county. Ulster County codes also define medical examiner. Really, it's basically a law consistent with state law. The county defines it as who is a physician who would be appointed by the county executive and be a resident of Ulster County, duly licensed physician, trained to investigate causes of deaths, obviously licensed as per New York State Department of Education. So, in addition to medical examiner might be a forensic pathologist, doesn't have to be a forensic pathologist. The medical examiners we have in Ulster County, and I'll show you that sort of chart that gives you the better idea of who's who, but you would need a forensic pathologist to do the work of doing the actual autopsy. Forensic pathologist is also a physician, trained as a pathologist with special training in forensic pathology. There is, at the present time, a relative shortage of forensic pathologists. I think there are only about 500 licensed forensic pathologists across the country. Mm-hmm. We're fortunate enough that we do have one that services Ulster County, Dr. Kat Neese. And he has, in fact, he actually wrote a book on forensic pathologists, so he's extremely well-educated and experienced in forensic pathology. If you look at the following page, the 2018 organization of the Medical Examiner Division, the way it's set up as per county statute, it comes under the Department of Health. It's a 24/7 obligation. So the you certainly need to have physicians who are willing to rotate call, be on call on a 24/7 basis. In our county, our medical examiner is Dr. Heller, and we have two deputy medical examiners. And again, it's really because of the 24/7, 365 days a year obligation. So we have two deputies who share the rotating call. Dr. Heller, Dr. Grovenberg, and Dr. Eric Stott, both licensed MDs, both county, Ulster County residents. We also took on a deputy medical examiner for medical legal investigations. Her name is Raquel Pollack. She is not a physician. However, she has experience in several medical examiner departments, one of which is Broward County, Florida. She has a 9-to-5 position with our department. She goes out during the day to calls when physicians who are on call cannot leave their practices to go and attend the scene. So she'll go to the scene of a homicide, a suicide, a car accident, whatever, and do that part of the investigation, feed the information back to the medical examiner who's a physician, and in turn, depending on the criteria that's met, decide to take that in as a medical examiner case. The next step, once that's brought into the morgue, again, Westchester Medical Center Health Alliance morgue is still our morgue, as it was since 1979. They bring the decedent into the, we contract with funeral directors to bring the decedent to the morgue. The body is stored until the forensic pathologist can actually do the autopsy. The autopsy involves not only doing the actual dissection, but it involves taking specimens of blood, tissue specimens, etc. So part of the autopsy involves the lab fees and the lab costs involved. The contract that we managed to execute, which I think was really remarkable in many ways, involved utilizing the same morgue as we had since 79 with Westchester Medical. We contracted with Westchester Medical to provide the forensic pathologist, so Dr. Katniss is actually an employee of Westchester Medical. And the laboratory, the toxicology screens, etc., we've contracted with a lab, a nationally reputed lab, to do toxic screen processing. So for all of the drug deaths, etc., they look for all the substances potentially that could be contributing to that death, and really provide a very efficient service once they get the specimen. If you look on the following page, I'm trying to give you a kind of a sense of how the numbers have looked going back to 2010. We physically went through all of our autopsy data, all of that information, to provide not only the total autopsy numbers that were done. Now, that's not the total number that were actually ME calls. There are some ME calls that the medical examiner says, no, this is a 90-year-old individual. Maybe they were living at home. They had, you know, some issues, physical issues, medical issues, etc. There's no real need to do the autopsy on that person. However, if they find an otherwise healthy 50-year-old dead in his house or her house with no known cause, yes, that would be a medical examiner case. So there's that discretionary component of the medical examiner call. But of the ones that were brought in for autopsy, you can see right here that back in 2015, 2016, we started peaking at an increased number of autopsies. When we looked at the toxicology screens of all of those autopsy cases going back to 2010, we can see very clearly an association between opioid overdoses and those decedents. So I graphed this out for you so you have a better visual impression of that going back to 2010. But it looks like at 2015, 2016, we peaked in the number of cases, autopsy deaths, deaths that were autopsy that had opioid as the cause of the death. We're sort of, with respect to the 2018 is still a work in progress, so you know there are a number of cases that still need to be ruled finalized, but you know, it's not necessarily true that we have a significant drop in the number of cases, but when we look at all the numbers at the end of the year and into January, we'll have a much better sense of our totals.
Can I just add also, if you were to go to the medical examiner's office at the health department website, you can see that we post monthly all the causes of death and by specific cause. And again, it's a transparency measure that we do. It's one of the things we raise awareness about the impact of opioids. I'm not aware of another county in the state that does it. So maybe we think it's important to do. We've been doing it for a while. Since we revamped the medical examiner's office a couple of years ago, we've done that. Right. They're updated monthly. You'll see there's a medical examiner division, and it's called viral statistics.
Okay. And it just gives like Your demographics.
How many died and what cause of death?
Not male, not female, not age or anything. Just
I think it has male, female.
Yeah.
You know, one of the things you have to be a little bit careful of is being able to track back, you know, in terms of the case with respect to privacy issues. So we try to present it in such a way that, we don't trans, you know, or we don't cross over for what's acceptable from a privacy standpoint and not, but if you look on the following page, one thing that we did see a really significant improvement in is the number of months that it took for the cases to be completed in terms of the final certificate of death, et cetera, cause of death. Huge difference, which we attribute to all of the changes that were made in the system, including the use of NMS labs, which is far more efficient than the Albany Medical Center labs that we had contracted with before. Having the forensic pathologist really dedicated to Ulster County, as opposed to contracting with a forensic pathologist out of the Albany area, which we had done. You know, and the efficiencies that are brought on by Raquel, who is there every day, really dealing with the paperwork issues, making sure the medical examiners have their certificates to sign off on, and kind of doing the supportive administrative component of the office. In the past, my secretary Katrina was involved. She owned the whole show, really, in dealing with decedents, grieving families who were not only grieving but angry, the funeral directors, the police, you name it, she was trying to manage the whole thing. And, you know, when we have a dedicated team with a dedicated system, the improvement in getting these reports out, which of course provides for closure for the families, they need them for insurance purposes, and what have you, is just so much more of an efficiency with respect to providing this service to the community. The improvement and the drop of the numbers of the months that it took is really quite significant.
So when it was up like over 5 months, they were actually in possession of the body still, right?
No, bodies would have been released once the autopsy was done.
Okay.
And the tissue specimens and what have you were all gotten. The forensic pathologist then decides this body is now ready for release for burial.
Sure.
Yes. So the body could have been buried, et cetera, but the decedent's families, without a death certificate that's finalized with cause of death, et cetera, can't really, wasn't closure for them, but it was also an issue legally with some of the settlements of estates and what have you. Mm-hmm. So, it was a big improvement.
You know, I know that. If you recall last year, the county controller had done an audit and raised concern about all this additional spending.
Right. Sure,
I can tell you, as the person that gets the call from an angry family member, but you know, why has it been 5 months since I don't know why my grandmother died? Mm-hmm. I can tell you that the quality of service is to the point that I haven't gotten a call like that in a year, and I used to get them monthly. Mm-hmm. So again, that.
We were getting up daily.
I know. We made a substantial investment. We fixed a lot of things. We coasted for a long time. We had a system that was designed for 1979, and it wasn't designed for today's challenges. And now we have a system that's designed for today's challenges. And I know from talking to Dr. Smith that people, other counties around our size and smaller, are facing with the same problem we dealt with 3 years ago, and they're now coming to us to.
Well, the Albany Medical Center, which had been doing doing most of the tox screens, et cetera, the forensic pathologist actually was from that area. He's actually a medical examiner in Rensselaer County and provides a service to a number of counties. He was doing over 600 cases a year, which is just unbelievable. The Academy of Forensic Pathology basically says they shouldn't be doing more than 250 of these cases. So, totally overloaded. Albany Medical Center was overloaded. In fact, they just came down, and with a number of counties being very upset, they decided they weren't going to provide the morgue services, they weren't going to provide the lab services, any of that. So, they kind of pushed back, and the Albany Medical Center just raised their prices tremendously. And it's a crisis for them at that point, at this point in the capital region now.
And you recall the discussion about our contract with Westchester Medical Center. So not only do they pay the salary and fringe benefits of an extremely expensive physician, I mean, as Dr. Smith said, there's not a lot of these physicians practicing in the country. We have a great one. He lives in Orange County. He contracts through Westchester. But when he often travels, he does lectures all over the country. When he's not available, they provide the backup automatically. So it saves us the expense of having two very high, such as Dutchess County has two very expensive physicians that do this work on a full-time basis. We were able to do it through a professional services contract. And it's high quality, high level of service, something that's more affordable for the taxpayer and something that's sustainable for us.
Especially, we didn't change too much from 79 to 2016.
Exactly.
It's really, I think, the moral of that story, right? I mean, things just didn't improve much from that time period, but the numbers of cases and complexity of cases went up.
And we now have a system where
a lot.
All the funeral directors have a rotating chance at some of this business where they have to go do pickups and deliveries and,
So when this comes up at Ways and Means, going back to the budget on page 29, right. I'm assuming Raquel is the regular pay, and then the two part-timers are your two doctors, Stott and Grovenberg?
That's correct.
And then
that's
your
correct.
Medical examiner's professional services.
No. The medical examiner is also a salaried employee.
Yeah.
The forensic pathologist is professional services.
He's the contracted forensic pathologist.
He's the one who actually does the physical autopsies.
And that's Katniss?
Yes.
Okay, all right. Thank you.
Professional services includes the pathologist, a deaner, the lab fees, and the transports.
Right.
A deaner is an assistant that helps with an autopsy.
Right.
Okay. That was under what, professional services?
So that's the totality of the contract with Westchester.
And transport, and okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And we contract with all the area funeral directors on a rotating basis for transport of remains. And depending on where you live in the county.
Thank you.
We're not going to dispatch some of the sovereign.
Not randomly rotating.
No.
But spread out.
So
they have a system.
Thank you.
They do.
You read my...
And it's meant to be fair. It's good work for these guys, and it's something that we pay mileage, and we pay more than we did several years ago, but we also adjusted to reflect the rates that are more prevalent today.
Well, because they have to pay their assistant too, and to transfer the body out of wherever it was found,
and of course you can imagine that with some of the causes of death, you've got to preserve a legal chain of custody for the law enforcement and for the district attorney's office, and also. Mm-hmm. That has an expense for it as well.
And that's all in professional services line?
Yeah. We could not, first of all, if we could find a forensic pathologist that we could hire and a backup, we couldn't afford to have them on payroll. They would be the highest paid employees at the county. I mean, we have a psychiatrist right now that makes $250,000 a year. Mm-hmm. This would be north of that by $50,000 plus benefits.
And I became a pediatrician.
Exactly.
What were you thinking?
Too late. I became a pediatrician for a good reason. Many good reasons.
So you could be working with people that didn't talk back and give you cooties.
You're right.
But at the same time, look what we decided to put up for $14,000 a year.
I did want to bring up one important contract for next month, so we're all on the same page. If you all met, this is Kristen Carney. Kristen is the Deputy Commissioner for Administration up at the Department of Health and Mental Health. And between the three of us and a couple others, we've just wrapped up negotiations of our adult mental health contract. It'll be coming to you next month. So you hear a lot of, somehow we have not improved mental health services in the county, and it's just not true. And you've outsourced, privatized. It's not what we did at all. So I know Mary was on the committee 5 years ago when we did the first contract. So we had this realization 5 years ago that we had a system where we were investing county dollars, you know, at double digits growth for many, many years because state reimbursement does not support adult mental health clinics the way that it should. And it was between our, the way that you also remember, we also had to manage these our clinic under a standard CSEA contract where the laborer at the public works department has the same work conditions as someone who works in a medical facility, right? So it's hard to do. So at the time, we did a very large pivot, and we did something so unique, and we created a public-private partnership. So at the time, we partnered with a very reputable adult mental health provider. At the time, it was called Hudson Valley Mental Health. They recently merged into their parent organization. So Family Services, the group that provides the Ulcer Prevention Council for us, they're the parent of the mental health clinic. So you'll see the contract, instead of saying Hudson Valley Mental Health, they'll say Family Services. You had one of the lease agreements on the agenda tonight. So what we did is we realized that there's some things that we do really well and some things that they do really well. For example, we have a great team of professional staff. We have psychiatrists, which quite frankly, they're really hard to come by in a rural upstate county. We actually have salaried psychiatrists on our payroll, both full-time and part-time. We have, we also have great licensed mental health therapists that provide the actual counseling on county payroll, right? But things that we didn't do super well is we didn't adopt a lot of the modern practices and how you operate a licensed mental health clinic. We didn't have a great medical record, electronic medical record. We had a lot of billing staff that did clerical work. You know, so what we did, if you recall, I know Barry was here, Craig was here as well too, back 5 years ago. So we formed a public-private partnership where we surrendered our operating license for adult mental health services, and we worked with OMH. We brought Hudson Valley Mental Health in to operate our clinics. They provide, they manage the license. They provide all of the back office support, the billing, scheduling, that type of work. Whereas in unlike where they operate, for example, they provide services in Dutchess County, and as I mentioned, you can't operate an adult mental health clinic without subsidy from the county. So in Dutchess County, they provide them with money. They just offset their deficit from their operation. We do it much differently. So we actually provide professional staff. So instead of providing them with money to make the clinic operate, we provide all the professional staff. So all the clinicians, the psychiatrists, the people that actually provide the direct service are still employees of the county. So when people say that, they privatize the services and the services are now terrible, that obviously can't be true because it's the same exact professionals providing the service when they were when the county held the license.
Jobs too.
Again, it's the same exact people.
I hope.
So again, that's politics. That's not the truth. The truth is that we have great care. We're highly rated. The same professionals, but if you recall back then, is that we gave up doing the billing and all the back office work. Those employees, those clerical employees, most of them were transferred to the Department of Social Services, where we created a dedicated HEAP unit and addressed some other deficiencies we had at the time. It was about 24 staff. So instead, they weren't laid off. We did this contract in agreement with CSEA. So all the professional staff, you'll still see them listed in the personnel listing at the Department of Mental Health. And then you'll see the clerical staff, they all work at the Department of Social Services, the ones that still haven't retired at this point. The nuance to this contract is that we wanted to develop a system where instead of having double-digit escalation of the county costs every year, we wanted to find stability and sustainability over a long period of time. And you'll see that, if you look at the budget for these clinics, it grows at a couple of points a year. We do it purposely. And when you look at this contract, what we've done is that when a professional staff from the county, clinician, prescriber, like a nurse practitioner or a psychiatrist, leaves county service, instead of us filling that position as a county employee, the not-for-profit clinic does that hiring. And then we provide a subsidy based upon a schedule. Mm-hmm. So when you look at this contract, you'll see a schedule that basically says, we're going to operate the clinic, you're going to provide the staff at a certain level, if that staff were to retire or leave service, we would then convert those funds for staffing into a part of the professional services contract based upon the schedule. So you're going to see, when you see the update of this contract next month, you're going to see that we adjusted the rates for the staffing, you know, because, you know, clinicians or psychiatry costs more today than it did 5 years ago, so we use some national standards to develop those rates. And then we also negotiated, I give Dr. Smith a lot of credit for this, we negotiated, we have a successful clinic. They draw a lot of clients. There are some other providers in the community that aren't doing so well. In fact, the Institute for Family Health, which is part, you know, up here on the Golden Hill, they also partner in Ellendale, they've stopped accepting new admissions to their adult mental health clinic. So we have a dramatic spike in our caseload because our providers haven't provided. So we actually negotiated with this provider that they will add another clinician at their cost into our roster as part of this contract renewal, with a review in case the caseload goes up more to actually add up to an additional staff person at their cost as well too. So again, we have a nice partnership. It's done well. We're ranked very highly through audits through the Office of Mental Health. And again, to say that somehow the services are less is hogwash, because they're the same exact county employees providing the service on a day-to-day basis, and they do a great job. And in fact, I know that, not this year, but last year you had this government reform committee, if you recall, I believe former legislator Parity chaired it, and they asked us for all this data, and we provided all the data, and that committee concluded very quickly that, you know, we're providing more services today than we did, you know, 5 years ago, and we know that the services are quality. It's the same exact employees. So give you a sense of it, but I wanted to know that that's coming next month. I want to make sure we have the support of the committee, because I don't want to lose that renewal, because I don't want to put, you know, if the contract were not renewed for next year, I got, you know, a dozen employees up in Department of Mental Health where we'd have a problem. Mm-hmm. So
they're currently at the Department of Mental Health. You'd be transferring them to?
No.
Five years
ago, we did the back office staff transfer.
Okay.
So we provide the professional care at the clinic. We no longer do the billing and other scheduling type work. That's done by the not-for-profit provider, which they do really well. I mean, they invest in the latest electronic medical records, where for us to get something like that online and running well, it's hard for a county. So again, we formed a partnership, it works well, but as far as the actual clinical care, those are employees of the county that that staff that clinic.
Okay. That's good.
Okay, yeah, but it's complicated, and again, like I said, at the time we had also
Can we ask you to explain this again next month?
I'm sure I'll be talking about this in ways that needs to be crazy, sure, right? But I'm sure she's listening to this too. But I want to give the committee members some confidence. You hear people saying things. But quite frankly, they also confuse some of the other providers in the community that are having some problems with our services, and somehow they think it's us, but it's not. I know that there are a couple providers, especially in Ellendale, that are struggling right now, and they are having some care issues. And Dr. Smith, as a monitor of the mental health system, is well aware of it. She's been working with OMH to correct some deficiencies. But again, they're not the services provided for this particular case.
And I have a question for Dr. Smith.
Sure.
Sorry, I'm losing my voice. I have a question. Do you have any oversight on how providers, our local providers, deal with, like, we just had the Coxsackie virus epidemic that went crazy. And I know that the physicians were saying 24 hours fever-free, although the CDC said that they're contagious much longer. Do we have any oversight? Do you have oversight over...
No, the physicians actually are licensed by the State Department of Education. They, independent physicians, don't have licensure from the Department of Health or any of that type of thing. So what we can do is provide guidelines. The State Department of Health can issue alerts or whatever that help to guide physicians in terms of their decisions and choices that they make as part of their care. But unless they do something egregious, there's really nothing.
So you don't like set like guidelines for what the...
Well, the CDC has guidelines.
Right.
You know, the State Department of Health would have
so
some guidelines.
So if they don't follow that, is there any recourse?
Not really.
Not really, yeah.
They can report them to the licensing board. Can the Department of Health issue a guideline that the daycare centers could rely on even if a physician says the child's ready to return?
That's a good idea.
See, that, see my...
Because that's what the what the daycare provider is presented with is that they want to keep the other kids healthy. And they get a doctor saying this child's ready to come back. And so the parents want the child back in daycare. But if their information that the doctor is relying on doesn't seem to be valid or the most cautious, perhaps, then what recourse does the daycare center have?
Unfortunately, not a lot.
Yeah.
Really, to be honest with you. It's, you know, the... you know, I would imagine, in terms of actual licensure or any kind of enforcement authority or anything like that, not really.
I know there's a lot of preventative things. I know that, for example, we had a very large tourism property in the county last year, the year before, had a virus problem, and, and some of the schools will have an issue. And I know Dr. Smith and her team will provide technical consulting to that facility. Here's what we need to do, wipe everything down, and, you know, help them. You know, here's how to get the facility back up and running and protect all the visitors
that
come there.
Right.
But
the problem with that particular disease is that as long as there's any blisters or anything else, it's kind of like chickenpox, right? They're still contagious. So, and sometimes you can't see where the blisters are. So they're being cleared by the doctor, and they really weren't. They were still very contagious. So there was really no protection for daycares, and it was totally rampant. So bad that, you know, places were having to close for.
Well, you know, certainly you can bring that to our attention, and then we could work with the state on that if it's to that extent. You know, certainly what could happen is that, you know, we could kind of interview folks and find out, you know, what's going on to help. But, you know, absolute enforcement authority on a clinical decision.
Because the doctor's office basically said it's not our problem. It's not our problem. It's, you know, if you let them back, then, you know, it's on you. But most of us, most daycare providers have a policy that when the doctor clears you, that's when you can come back.
Right.
So if you're giving them a note saying they're cleared to come back, when they're really high, like at the height of contagiousness, which is not being a professional, you wouldn't know, because normally the criteria would be basically fevers, would be kind of your judgment thing.
You know, certainly we could look into it as best I can tell you. But, you know, as a, you know, just knowing the kinds of situations that go on, that, you know, we had a practitioner a few years ago who was, because of bad kind of office hygiene and whatever, was actually infecting patients with a virus that was affecting their eyes. And when we had a number of cases, we went in, the state came in, we helped them review their practices in terms of their sanitation and how they were handling the medications and, you know, washing hands and all of that kind of stuff. So eventually we did bring an end to the epidemic that that provider was creating, but was it such that we could say, well, you can't see other patients because of this issue, or we're going to have to bring some kind of action against you, even if when he was not doing things correctly? So
I wasn't sure it was some kind of contagious public health issue if you had the authority to say that this, this, and this would have to be done to
Didn't they have measles and mumps down south? They closed schools.
Well, and there were a lot of places were closed. A lot of adults. There were professional adult teams that were shut down this past summer with that whole, I mean, it was bad.
Well, and as you said, it's your usual policy to rely on the doctor's note. But if what you're seeing in the children in your care doesn't back that up, you could, as the center, say, we are not going to accept children back until 2 days after doctor gives the clearance.
Right.
And so you
But when you look at what the CDC says, it's way more than 2 days.
Is it really?
It says...
From 2 days after the clearance? You could come up with a reasonable.
It says generally a person with hand, foot, and mouth disease is most contagious during the first week of illness. People can sometimes be contagious for days or weeks after symptoms go away. Mm. And can still spread the virus to others. True. So there's not the usual, in this particular case, there's not the usual bar that you would have. Yeah. Like you would have fever free or you know. And sometimes the blisters are in their throat and stuff. I wouldn't be able to look and be sure that they didn't. And we had everything from, some of them had really...
Mm-hmm.
A lot of blisters, and they had, and you know, so it was obvious that they weren't ready to come back. But some of the other kids in the very beginning of the whole thing.
Had anyone called us about this? Because
I did.
You did? Did you speak to a member of our department?
I didn't get a call back.
Okay.
But, yeah. But
this is just
I left
the
a message.
Yeah. The extent of this, it just didn't reach my office.
Yeah, it was in August. It was really bad. It was really, you know, and the doctor said that you know, that they were seeing a lot of it, but there was not, and there was. I know all the daycare providers that I talked to that it was an issue, that they were, you know, whatever this whole thing was.
Now you have
was really strong
immune system revved up against us. I have to look it up to remember.
I guess there's different.
Different strains.
There's different strains, so you could potentially get
a different strain.
Get a different strain, yeah. And the parent, and also with us parents, were getting it too.
Yeah.
So, but I was just wondering if there was some kind of way to. If there was any oversight for physicians in an area that, when clearly what their parameters were not keeping it from spreading, if there was, but not really.
It's pretty tough.
You have to bump it up to the state
not really
level.
Yeah.
We'd have to at least discuss it with the state level. Mm-hmm. See, but I'd have a feeling that they would come back to us and say it's not their jurisdiction.
Yeah. Because, mm-hmm. yeah, I mean, how would you keep track of that so you would be able to put out maybe a public
conditions through the CDC, but I don't know if they do.
Must report?
Yeah. Well, there's reporting requirements for specific illnesses, for specific diagnoses. But I don't think Coxsackie is one of them. That's one of the reasons there's a gap here.
Maybe. I was just curious if you had any.
Did you call the CDC by any chance?
No.
Actually, that might be.
That would have been interesting.
If we see something like that again, besides getting our own health department more involved.
Is there a place
I've had very good responses whenever I've had to call the CDC. Now they're way down on staff than they used to be and all that. But
do they are physicians required to report numbers of a contagious disease like that or
it
not really?
It depends on the disease. There are different reporting requirements for different diseases. Some of which demand a phone call that immediately.
Right.
To the
right.
State, then the state gets the CDC involved and that sort of thing. So it really depends on the disease.
On what it is.
There's quite a list, to be honest with you. But,
Thank you.
Well, I'm sorry you didn't get a call back, that's for sure.
I know.
Sorry I hadn't heard about it till now.
I know.
You should call me.
I didn't think of that.
That's
sorry.
Right. Absolutely.
Well,
Ken'll call me.
Just on another. Are you okay with your budget? Are you short on anything or any programs in jeopardy? Is there you know,
I think
the Cadillac Vision,
stable.
You're good?
Okay. Pretty stable, all things considered.
That's been part of the reason for some of the shifts over time, is to provide that kind of stability in the face of changing.
Exactly. Yeah.
Support levels from federal and other sources.
It changes all the time.
I know that we made a substantial investment in the medical examiner's office 2 years ago, and I was surprised to hear the criticism about it, to be honest with you, because we worked hard to really put together, which I think we built a system for the next 20 years. I know we've had a good result with it. So. While cutting taxes at the same time.
Well, I think this PowerPoint was very good in explaining.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah.
Like giving a good background, welcome. You know. So if you didn't
you're
follow
welcome.
Along, you really.
Yeah. Oh, thanks.
Yes. Thank you.
Like you said, Ken, sometimes politics gets in the way of numbers. So, yeah.
But again, I'd be happy to discuss the mental health service package with anybody.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
well,
I hear the information, but again. If the services are that bad, in reality, it's the same exact employees. So, you know, they must have been bad before. You know.
Yeah. Very good. Well, thank you, everyone. Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome.
Dr. Thank
you. Motion to adjourn.
Thank you.
Second. Yeah.
Mm, all
thank
in favor.
Thank you very much.
Aye.
Aye.
All righty.
I would have liked to have asked social services some questions.
Oh,
they have
yeah.
this huge amount
sure
in
community,
and then they have this.